In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The U.S. Department of Justice in 15 states accused Apple of monopolizing the smartphone market in a landmark antitrust lawsuit. Online recruiting site Glassdoor abruptly changed its terms of service and has started adding users' personally identifiable information to their profiles without consent. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis signs a bill preventing children under 14 from signing up for social media accounts. And our screenless AI devices like the CES hit Rabbit, a solution looking for a problem? Maybe, but the $199 price tag may make it not matter so much. We got all this and more for you in episode 123 of The Tech John. From Columbus, Ohio, I'm your host, Rob Dunwood.
And coming out of Philly is your girl, Tech Life Steph.
And out of Atlanta, this is Terrence Gaines, a.k.a. Brother Tech, a.k.a. Jet Lag. Still suffering from the effects of jet lag from my recent trip. Went over to the Middle East, which was 8 hours ahead. So I was up like 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning, thinking like, oh, okay, I'm nice. And then in the mornings, it was tough to get out of bed no earlier than 1 o'clock. So we missed the breakfast. We missed the lunch. So we had to hurry up and rush and throw clothes on and run out and kind of hit these sites. But I thought I could get over jet lag. I thought when people talk about jet lag, I was like, that ain't no big thing. Just don't go to sleep on the airplane over there. And I tried that. Didn't work. Knocked out like a light.
And I always thought that was the thing, like sleep on the airplane so you can, I guess, depending on what time you land,
right,
you can hit the ground running kind of deal.
Right. So I left last Thursday night at like from Atlanta at like 9:10 o'clock. So at night. So my plan was stay up all night as much as I could on the plane, get there at like 1 because it's a time difference. So by the time I got there, it was like 1 o'clock a.m. their time. So I figured, great. If I just stay awake the whole plane ride,
right, you'll be ready.
As soon as I get there, I crash.
Yeah.
And then I wake up, it's 8 o'clock in the morning, I'm all good. Got on the plane.
Yeah.
Went straight to sleep. Messed my whole deal up.
So we're glad to have you back. Steph and I held it down last week, though, but we glad to have you back, particularly because there is a whole bunch of Apple stuff that we want to dig into this week. And I want to just get your take on all the stuff that's happened with the DOJ and all that kind of stuff. But before we get there, I do want to let everybody know that if you would like to support The Tech John, you can do so by becoming a patron over at patreon.com/The Tech John. That is The Tech JAWN. We've got multiple tiers over there, any one of which gets you access to our ad free RSS and our live stream that we're doing right now, and also our after party. So we hang out about a half hour after the show and just talk about whatever. So once again, if you'd like to support the show, you can do so by heading over to patreon.com/TheTechJohn. So with that, Terrence, as I was saying, that the DOJ and I believe 15, 16 states, they're accusing Apple of monopolizing the smartphone market in a, what, you know, most people are saying, not most people, most publications are saying, a landmark antitrust lawsuit. That's how the Wall Street Journal put it. But essentially, this is, I believe, the third time in like the last 14 years that the Department of Justice has had some issues with Apple. But this is the first time that they've gone full antitrust and that you are doing anti-business stuff by monopolizing what you do with iOS and how you run your store, how you actually don't allow any other, you know, platform to use SMS. There's a whole bunch of things and a whole lot of articles that we're going to, you know, dig into. But I just wanted to get your take right off the bat. Does the United States Department of Justice, do they have a case here?
Well, I mean, if you sue anybody, you do have a case. You know, are they going to win it? I mean, it's possible, because if you've got this much support, allegedly this much support and this much backing, you know, you got the Department of Justice, you got, pretty sure you got other lawmakers trying to get a win. You got election season rolling around. So they're like, okay, let's make it look like we're making some moves. You know, I mean, it has some juice, but it'd be curious to see what Apple's response is, particularly as how much money Apple brings in as far as the market, the market share, as far as those things are concerned, as it compares to Apple's relationship with China. You know, I think my guess is Apple has a better relationship with China than the United States does. So that may take into effect as far as how far this goes, as far as Apple's pushback, as far as jobs, as far as, you know, all kinds of things that Apple can do to kind of move their money around. They may move their money offshore. They may, you know, as a result of this, you know, if Apple wants to be petty, they can relocate, you know, their home base or whatever the case may be. So it's a lot of things Apple can do. But the initial question, do they have a case? I mean, it's the United Justice Department. You know, Apple has always been on the hot seat as far as how they, you know, do their business, as far as letting third-party developers, you know, as it relates to how they operate, as far as whether or not they are being restrictive or not. So, I mean, it's popular, so it'll have some juice. I mean, that's the only thing I could say.
I don't think it's gonna like. I just don't think that lawmakers have enough of a technical understanding of what is happening at Apple. There were a couple things between the article, and there was a video sort of linked to the article where Merrick Garland was actually speaking and sort of giving the debrief about the suit and talking. And he was making some errors. I mean, in one in particular where he said he was talking about the 30% tax on the App Store, all apps, you know, 30% commission, excuse me, that all apps have to pay in the App Store. And he was like, companies of all sizes. He had so much gravity in his voice, and, you know, companies of all sizes have to pay this 30%. And not all companies do have to pay 30%. So it was just like, so there was that. And then in the article referenced WeChat. And the fact that Apple was somehow restricting WeChat or the features of WeChat in some way, which also was another, you know, and they're not doing that either. So it was just like, you know, is this just a lack of understanding that Apple will be able to exploit in court once they have real experts, you know, laying out what they do and do not do. And you know, already there are a couple things they could already counter in what Merrick Garland actually said was in the suit and what was part of the reason they were suing Apple. There's already a couple things they can counter because the information is just not factually correct. So I don't know. I don't know if it's just a matter of them not having that technical understanding, or if they just have it out for Apple and the other FANG companies. So this is not, you know, Apple specific. They've sued Google and Amazon and I think one other company as well, Meta probably. So they're suing big tech. They're going after big tech, you know, however they can get it. But it just, I don't see much happening here. I think all of those companies have way too many lobbying dollars to spend to get this buried. And I just think, again, more theater, more performative, you know, work from our government to make it seem like they're being tough on something.
Yeah. And so I'm reading a story from 9to5Mac, and the lawsuit that the DOJ brought up mentions social stigma. It doesn't necessarily, and this is just one of the parts of it. Let me read this. It says, this is a quote from the lawsuit. Many non-iPhone users also experience social stigma, exclusion, and blame for breaking chats where other participants use iPhones, the suit reads.
And so you're suing somebody for a green bubble, you know?
That's what I was going to say.
Are you serious?
Right. It goes on to note that particularly powerful certain demographics, like teenagers, who the Wall Street Journal reported 2 years ago, dread the ostracism that comes with having an Android iPhone.
Bruh.
If y'all trying to sue because people
that's not
feel
yeah, bad. That's not going to so, buy a whole lawsuit because right. the green bubble makes me feel bad.
So like, right. I'm listening to folks who say, you know what? Apple should be concerned, not overly concerned, but they should be concerned. But after looking at Merrick Garland and others just fumble completely all over even describing what is happening here, it's like, y'all probably going to be all right. Because as you said, only big companies really pay that 30%. You know, we hear Epic complain about 30%. But the, you know, the two-person development house is being run out of a garage that sells 87,000 copies of their app a year. They're not being handled the same way. And then this was a point that someone made. So you mean to tell me that if you get your driver's license, but you can't afford a Ferrari, even though there are kids at your school whose parents can, should Ferrari not be able to sell Ferraris because you feel some kind of way because you drive in a, you know, you're driving a Volvo? And I'm like, that's just not a good argument.
Yeah. End of the day,
they're not a social company
to use Apple products. Yeah.
And that's where the
there is
that's
a where the plethora monopoly. Of other technology out here available to people to get around using Apple. It's not a requirement.
Yeah. Right. And it'd be one thing for the monopoly argument if not being able to use an iPhone stopped you from doing something, anything.
Anything.
Not using an iPhone doesn't stop you from doing anything. You know, now how Apple works with people, you can make that argument. But again, that's not necessarily a Apple refusing or excluding or stopping or preventing a company, a person, a consumer, an enterprise does not stop the whole, does not make them unable to do a task, process, whatever the case may be. But just my original point was, I mean, they have a case because they brought a case.
Yeah.
But they don't, I don't think they have the burden of proof, not the burden of proof, the term is escaping me, but I just don't think they have enough, I guess burden of proof is what I'm
saying. Yeah, burden of proof. It's like by a preponderance of the evidence is how it would work, because this is not criminal case. This is, you know, do most of the jury believe that you're good or believe that something needs to happen? So there are some areas that are problematic for Apple. And what my gut tells me is that Apple may just change some of these areas before before it gets to this point. So,
right.
You know, for example, one area is that, well, yeah, you do stifle innovation if you simply will not allow anyone to use, like in the United States, there is no third party tap to pay app. You cannot put another application. You can't put a Google Wallet on your iPhone and use it to tap to pay. You can't put the Visa app on your iPhone and use it to tap to pay, because Apple is actively saying, no, we're only going to allow this for our platform. That's one area to where, maybe.
But even in that argument, those companies that you mentioned Visa, you mentioned maybe Google, maybe Android. Yes, you have a case there. But Visa, Discover, MasterCard, American Express. You can use your credit card themselves to tap to pay. So again, the argument is Apple not allowing Visa, Discover, MasterCard, American Express to put tap to pay on their phone, stopping people from using tap to pay? Is the answer yes, then you got a case. If the answer is no, and I can just whip out my card and put it on there and do the same process, maybe a little bit faster because I ain't got to use my face. I ain't got to use my thumb. I got to put in no code. I just use my card itself, put it on there. It taps. Is that stopping any? Is that stifling innovation?
Yeah.
That's argumentative.
And once again, this is why it's going to court. People have to argue and a judge and a jury ultimately have to adjudicate. But what some folks are saying is like, here's another area where Apple could see this is kind of on a line. They look a lot like Microsoft in some of the ways that they do things. And there was a video that is going around that just took a look at the video and some of the things they were talking about, how, you know, back in the day when Microsoft just very, very finely controlled what you can install on Windows-based operating systems. And as soon as they lost that antitrust case, and then iTunes was basically able to run on PCs, iTunes just kind of, you know, kind of took over. So yes, it's like the question that was raised by this is that because Microsoft was doing the things the way that they were and just not allowing innovation on that platform, you literally stymied what is now the biggest company on earth from becoming so. So could you kind of make some parallels with that, with by only allowing apps to come through your store, by only, you know, by having this 30% VIG on them to where it's just not cost effective for developers to build for other platforms? Is that kind of antitrust? I don't know the answers to these. I'm not calling it one way or the other, but these are the arguments that are being made. And maybe if the state can actually more eloquently argue their arguments without actually making mistakes in their own right. briefs.
That part.
You know, like I said, I don't know that Apple's going to flat out lose this, but it might be a thing of where, okay, yeah, we're going to, you know, like they've already said they're going to put RCS on.
Yeah, they're going to have to make some concessions. Yeah. They're absolutely going to have to make some concessions, but I don't think they're going to quote unquote lose this case necessarily. I think they'll concede the things that they probably were already looking to do anyway, and the rest of it, I mean, Apple's going to keep being Apple. I don't understand. It's just like
the messaging thing, though. It is really interesting how I am an Android user. I would say that my primary messaging app is WhatsApp, just because I've been using it for years. I have hundreds of contacts. That's how we would communicate, just because I used to have teams when I was working in corporate that actually were based in the UK. And that's actually, I shouldn't even say the UK. They were just based in Europe. And that is just how communication happens there. And that never really was a thing here, because we always had free SMS with whatever. And then iMessage right. came out, and it's just like, oh, this is just way better. Let's just use it. But now there's WhatsApp. There's even if you want to get in the Facebook world, there's Messenger, there's Telegram, there's Signal. There's all these other applications. The one thing is the fact that those other applications can't run SMS on iPhone or any iOS device. They can only run their platform. They can't run the standards. Once again, I don't know that that's going to be the thing that would tank Apple, because that's something that Apple can very easily change to where, okay, yeah, we're going to allow that. But
well,
you still.
The fact that you use the Tim Cook's little joke about, you know, buying your mom an iPhone, you know, like that's not, it is admissible in court, but right. Is that strong enough evidence to show, you know, an antitrust type of situation? Like, I just feel like the cases, like they actually could be making a case, but they just haven't. And yeah. I don't know if it, again, goes back to their, you know, lack of a true technical understanding of what Apple does and is doing and is not doing, or if this was just a rush to do in an election year and we got to get something out that looks strong and tough on big tech. But it's just like, if you really were a little more thoughtful and your people actually understood what was happening in the space, you might actually have a case. But you out here like using green bubbles as justification to sue a whole company.
Here's the thing about the green bubble, because I do agree with this. So the green bubble, that actually goes against Apple. I think we talked about this before when you was bullying me about me having green bubbles and messing up our group chat all the time. You know, I'm never going to let that, you know, as long as we do this show, I'm going to refer back to that every time I can. But that actually goes against Apple's own design ethos. So they didn't, you know what? They say that putting this green color and then having a white font on top of it, it's hard to read. Apple knows this. Therefore, they don't allow that type of, font and color on top of green to exist anywhere on the iPhone, with the exception for iPhone users that are not signed up to use iMessage and are just using, you know, SMS. That's the only place on there that it does that. So that's where you're going to get folks saying, oh, Apple, this is kind of anti-competitive. Okay, we'll just change that. It's just like, we're going to change the color of the font. Still ain't going to get them, you know. Well, I guess now if they're using the RCS, you will get the read receipts and this and that and the other. But folks are thinking that, oh, they'll just start working with Google. And it's like, you clearly don't know Apple very well. Like when they work with Google, it's because Google is giving them billions and billions of dollars to work with them. They're not trying to make anything any easier for Android users. And in a lot of ways, why should they? They're, you know, that's not our platform. You chose to go against the families, which is what some folks will say. So you get what you get when you're not using us. We'll see if any of this sticks and comes back on Apple.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I think it's ridiculous.
Yeah, I'm not so sure.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
So this next story, y'all, this one kind of bothered me, even though I'm not a Glassdoor user. This story about Glassdoor. So for those who don't know, Glassdoor is an employment website. And one of the really cool things where they made their claim to fame is that they allowed users to anonymously leave reviews about individual companies that they were working for, about departments that they worked in for a particular company, even for specific managers that they worked for at a company. You could leave all this information anonymously. But a few years ago, they acquired a company called Fishbowl, and Fishbowl's terms of service, which is, you know, Fishbowl is kind of like a LinkedIn type of network. Glassdoor acquired them, but Fishbowl absolutely requires that you identify yourself when you're creating these accounts. So what Glassdoor did was they just changed their terms of service for everyone without even asking whether or not you were cool with it or not. And beyond that, they started, if they could find out who you were just adding your information to your account, regardless of whether you opted into this or not from the jump. And I don't know. That seems kind of sketchy to me. Tech Life Steph, I figured you would have a lot to say about this one, but I want to get your take on this.
Yeah, super sketchy. It's funny. I don't know if you guys remember, I can't remember his name. I'm so sorry. I used to be like, damn, Steph, the boy we had on as a guest that was the founder of InsideVoices.io.
Ah, I know you're talking about. I have to go.
I think Ecal. I don't know if that was his first name or his last name, but I know Ecal was in there somewhere. But anyway, like I follow him on TikTok, and he actually was talking about this on TikTok and about the idea that, you know, it just basically goes against everything Glassdoor sort of stood for, at the beginning. And, you know, and he talked about how he's been, you know, in discussions with different companies to get acquired and would never sell to Glassdoor specifically because they've changed this policy and done this thing. And the whole, you know, idea is to let people have a safe space to make these comments and things like that and have these discussions. And, you know, he was heated about that. He's really, really heated about it. And I mean, I get it. It's like, it just flies in the face of the whole point of the platform altogether. I don't know what Glassdoor thinks they're pivoting to with this Fishbowl acquisition, because I don't know that you're going to create the kind of community that LinkedIn already has and get those billion people to move over to a new platform. But this ain't the way to do it. This is not a good look. And they had another thing where they were adding erroneous information to people's to people's profiles as well. And I'm thinking they probably have some AI tool doing that part of it. But it's just like, it's just, you know, wrong up one way and down the other. And I just really would be curious as to what Glassdoor's, you know, overall strategy was with this. Cause it, I mean, they're like hemorrhaging users at this point.
Oh yeah. They are bleeding out.
You know, just completely went, you know, contrary to, I guess, what they thought they were going to be able to do. And they really just, you know, hollowed out and just decimated the core of their business by doing this. So I would just be curious to know what they were thinking.
So I'm kind of confused. And what I mean by that is I'm reading this story and they talk about this person that went through and requested all their data be deleted off of Glassdoor. And it looks like she had a conversation with somebody at Glassdoor. And the Glassdoor comment was, since we require all users to have their names on their profiles, we will need you to update your profile to reflect this, one Glassdoor employee wrote while reassuring her that your
anonymity. People ain't gonna know who you are. People still won't know who
right,
you are.
Right, right, right. So it goes on to say, no one has the ability to see your user profile and the contents within it, meaning no one, including your employer, will be able to see your details. So I'm concerned as to, is Glassdoor making people add their names to their profiles, but then users have to go in and check a box that says, keep me anonymous?
They're not letting them stay anonymous at all. They can stay anonymous to the general public, but Glassdoor was never collecting that information before.
Never.
And
never.
Now they are. Like, so you could literally just go on and type some stuff and never have to put your name or anything else. But now they're requiring that.
Don't trust it.
That's what I'm saying. Don't trust it.
So folks are saying, well, wait a minute. If you can remain anonymous, I don't see what the problem is. The problem is that what Glassdoor has done, they have made themselves a target for every hacker that wants to make a name for themselves. Because as Steph just said, it used to be you could go to Glassdoor and you did not have to give any of your information in order to create a profile, you know, to create like the profile you were creating. You didn't have your name. It didn't have your email. It had nothing that was uniquely identifying you to their back end database. Right. And that is what is changing. So I know some folks got the story wrong. They were thinking that you had an anonymous post about your boss that you don't like, and now that is out on for the world to see. It's not quite like that. It's just that now that post is linked to your profile that has your name and information in it. And this is what really, really.
And did I hear something about they were going to start selling information to employers if like upon request or something like that?
That part.
But isn't that a part of this?
That like, part. Yeah. So the issue is that you've written, let's just say you go out and you write some scandalous stuff about your employer and they get hacked. And now your employer is able to see, oh, you're the one who went out here and told Earth about what was going on inside of that closed door meeting that nobody was supposed to know about.
Even if your posts and things on Glassdoor stay anonymous, quote unquote, air quotes, you're not anonymous on Fishbowl at all.
There
is no anonymity on Fishbowl. So, you know, somebody that really, really wanted to be petty and had a lot of time on their hands could start piecing together information from one platform into the, well, this person wrote this and it sounds very similar to the language on this post over here.
Yeah.
And this looks like something that person. So it wouldn't be a far stretch to say you could match profiles between the platforms and figure out who was writing that shit. So Glassdoor is out of pocket completely.
And then, so you mentioned Glassdoor selling information. This was so funny. I just read a blog post on Glassdoor real quick. And I want to read this. they so shady. I want to read this this paragraph. The title is, "Does Glassdoor Sell My Data?" And this is Glassdoor response on their blog. The definition of sale, quotes, is broadly defined by applicable law. So it isn't always clear what is and what isn't a sale.
Did they just go Bill Clinton? Did they go Bill Clinton on this?
Let me finish. In the interest of providing our users with transparency into our data practices, we have chosen to offer the ability to opt out of our practice of what we generally view as data sharing, but which others may consider selling.
So they said it depends on what your definition of is.
Right.
So, but here's the thing. It's even worse than this, because you can say, okay, I'm not down with that. Let me just go ahead and I'm going to delete my account before y'all do this. Well, no, because, you know, and I'm sure everyone, not everyone, but many people who are listening have seen this before, where you can go to a, you know, go to a very, you know, to a website. And instead of having to type in your username and password for the website, you can just authenticate with your Facebook account, or you can authenticate with your Google account. You can authenticate with your, with your Microsoft account. Terrible idea, but it is something you can do. So what Glassdoor is doing, and this is why some of the information that they are automatically populating is wrong. If they think, oh, you, this is the account that you authenticated with. This is the first name on that account. Here's the middle initial on that account. Here's the last name on that account. And here's the email address for that account. We're going to just go ahead and, for your convenience, just enter all that information to our database and make your account no longer be anonymous. They're just doing that automatically. So as Steph, you said, they are hemorrhaging is not even the word. Basically, it is like, you know, it's like Noah's flood. Did this happen right now? People getting up out of there. And like I said,
I don't know how they thought this was going to get them that bag. Like, this was just such a bad, like, somebody, it almost feels like sabotage, honestly, because it's like, how did you think that this was going to work? Like, in your mind, like, how do you possibly think this was going to work? I don't get it.
It sounded like they was losing money, and this is a last ditch effort to get some data that's valuable enough that people may want. And it sounds like, all right, well, we just got to burn a bridge with our customers in order to remain afloat with the, with the corporations.
Yeah, this is like I said, when I read this, I'm like, yeah, I don't think I would want to keep my account. Oh, wait a minute. They may have already done this, and I went and checked. Oh, I don't have a Glassdoor account, so I'm cool. But it's like this one, it just doesn't make sense. It's like, how could you not anticipate that this would be the reaction of folks if you made this move?
We saying some people might call it selling, but we tend to think of it
it's
more
shared. We sharing.
Yeah, we shared for money. We shared for money.
Exactly.
It's like we're not selling it. We're just trading. You give us dollars, and we'll give you data. That's not, right. It's not a sale.
Bartering. It's more bartering than anything.
Right. Yeah. And they go on to say, please note that if you choose to opt out of selling your data, you may miss out on some of the benefits of having your data shared with our affiliate partners as described above. It's like, please. You see ads.
It is.
That's
crazy.
What I'm missing out on. A bunch of ads, personalized ads. No, thank you.
So, yo, this story, I think, actually just came out today, but Ron DeSantis signed a bill requiring parental consent for kids under 16 to hold social media accounts. So I want to get each of you's take on that.
So I want to hear, this is Stephanie's area. Yeah. This is a weird.
Stephanie, I'm about to be busy this week.
As much as, you know, I want the government to do something to help our young people, this ain't it. This is the same as the TikTok ban. It's a lot of hoopla, and it's not actually going to work. I just, you know, they're trying to
point of clarification. This is different because this is actually a law. He signed this here. So this is how it is right now in Florida.
It goes into effect on January 1st, 2025. No one under the age of 13 in the state of Florida, it will be permitted to have a social media account. 14 and 15 year olds will need to get parental consent to have social media accounts, and they're going to start fining, which I'm not sure how you're going to do this, because they're going to look at accounts on these platforms that look like they're from 13 year olds, and they want those accounts deleted completely. And if they don't, they're going to start fining these platforms for having these accounts on their platform. So I'm just like, how are you going to ascertain whether or not an account is owned by a 13-year-old? Like, if the age that they put in there when they created the account is 17 or 18 or 25 or 50, you know, just because they happen to be posting a certain type of content does not necessarily mean that that account is owned by a 13-year-old. So like the idea that you're just going to do some sort of purge, this major purge of all 13-year-olds account, like that's crazy, number one, because you might be getting rid of somebody, and it might be an account that's managed by the parent. It might be mm-hmm. a child account that's managed by the parent that's been monetized, that's supporting this family, mm-hmm. you know, through monetization. And now you're going to be like, oh, it's a whole bunch of, you know, 13-year-olds on here or people that look young. So just get rid of this account. Like you can't do that. You really aren't going to be able to make that determination and just unilaterally and arbitrarily, you know, squash those accounts. And then it's just like, you know, people got VPNs. Are you going after the VPN companies now? If it's known that a 13-year-old has a VPN on their phone and is using a VPN to get on, you know, TikTok, like, are you going after those companies? And then the other part of the bill, in addition to the social media part, is that no one under the age of 18 is going to be able to access adult sites, i.e. pornographic websites, at all. You know, they're going to require some sort of either facial recognition or age verification through ID or something to get onto these platforms. And that just opens up a whole nother can of worms around privacy and security and people's personal information. So I just, like, again, it sucks because this one actually got through because it is still largely performative theater. You know, you're still not trying to protect kids' privacy and anything like that. You just really want
to... You're not trying to work with the companies.
You're not trying to work with the companies. You just want to look tough on
tech. You're not trying to educate kids.
Ain't nobody, there's nothing in the law that says every school has to have a digital literacy program or a media literacy program in schools and kids need to be taught. There's nothing in there about that, but you just go and say parents can, you know, take away or do, and it's just, I can't stand it. I can't stand it.
I understand what they were trying to do. They just went about it in the worst possible way to actually do this. And you know what?
Isn't this the opposite of conservatives, less government intervention? It's like, why you then turn around and do all this? It's like Florida's weird anyway. It's just like they want to be free, but you don't. It's like you're conservative, but you want the politics to be leaning all on schools and leaning all on education.
You don't want government until you want the government to make people do what you want them to do.
It's free market until it's something I want. Yeah, it's crazy.
It's ridiculous.
There's definitely going to be other states that are going to try to do this, but I would just caution those states that do this. You got to be careful if you're not big, if you're not a big state like Florida. Florida is a humongous state. It's got a lot of people in it. So the social media companies are going to try to figure out, okay, how do we navigate around this? But if you're a small state, I would not put it beyond Meta to treat a small state like they treat Australia. All right, cool. We out.
Utah has something similar on the books. And, but even larger states like the porn industry, F Texas, because mm-hmm. Texas already has a law like this on the books as far as under 18, you got to get, you know, some kind of verification. And a lot of porn sites was just like, we won't be in Texas. Mm-hmm. So peace out, Texas. Yeah.
I don't see social media companies leaving a state like Florida behind.
Probably not.
There's just too much money that they're making there. But this is just not the way to do it, because now, you know, who's going to be liable? Like, I remember, I think we talked about this on a show a few months ago where, you know, someone's proposing that, you know what, you should not make individual companies have to do account verification or mobile devices. That's something that make Apple do that or make Android do that? I don't know that that's the answer, but it is kind of a thing. It's like if the phone says you're under 13, then you can't get to, you know, sites that don't allow you to be under 13. If the phone says you're under 18, then you can't get to sites that says you can't go, you know, go to, you know, be under 18. Instead of making every individual company say, we've got to somehow verify whether or not you're, you know, you're lying or not. So what do you do?
Everybody's using a different method. Everybody's storing your data a different way. Security's different across a billion different app platforms. I mean, it's insane. It's absolute insanity.
So, you know, is Florida, are you going to go after parents? Because here's the thing. If you have a child that you have provided with a phone and they're 11, 12, 13 years old, and that child gets on the phone and they just for this site, they just lie and say that they're 22. They just add 10 years to their age. Whose fault is that? Is that the parents' fault because they weren't checking? Is it the fault of the company? It's like if the company says, okay, you tell me what the law is. Okay, I have to verify age. Okay, how do we do that, state of Florida? Okay, that's what you want. Okay, cool. That's what we're going to do. Then they do it. And then every child says, oh, so all I got to do is just say I'm, you know, 10 years older than I am and it works. So how do you, you know, I think Steph, you said this, how do you enforce this? I don't see how this is enforceable. And I'm not saying that we shouldn't have laws because you can't enforce laws, but this one doesn't make sense. It's like the loophole is, oh, I'm just going to say I'm older than I am. Problem solved.
We should be promoting better social media use, more responsible social media use. It's like, I don't understand why that's so hard to work to promote better social media use. So all these other issues that stem from social media use.
Shameless plug.
It's just like, it's crazy how.
It is. It is. If you teach the kids better, we sort of start mitigating these issues. I mean, it doesn't eliminate them, but it definitely mitigates them. And then, you know, again, back to monetization, like if my 10-year-old went viral for something and now is bringing in, you know, $1,000 a week on TikTok, you best believe I'm letting him stay on that damn level. Like, come on. Like if they're enjoying what they're doing and it's not interfering with their schoolwork and, you know, we've established what the screen time limits are and everything else. But they just have struck a niche that is allowing them to monetize their platform. That's college money right there. Like, who am I to say, oh, you're 12. You can't be on this platform, you know, yet. So let's just shut this all down and wait a year and a half until you turn 14 to get back on here and start. Like that's crazy. That's crazy.
Yeah. I would imagine that there's probably going to be, for an election coming up probably in the fall, where they're going to put some type of resolution on to where they can see if they can't get this to where it doesn't actually go into law. I can't imagine that not happening because you really are in a way going to put let's just say that you somehow could make every child adhere to this in the state of Florida. They're all okay. So yeah, you no longer have children who have TikTok accounts and they're not creating stuff for YouTube shorts and they're not doing Instagram. They're not doing any of this stuff, but all these children in all these other states that don't have this law are able to do that. They're just, you know, creating a level of digital literacy that your children in your state don't have. It's just going to put them behind. And I'm not saying that's the reason this shouldn't be a law, but it's just like that is something that have to think about. It's a consideration.
Absolutely. I tell kids all the time, like not having a presence can be a detriment to you.
The same as
getting out here acting reckless on the platforms, not being there might also be a detriment, you know, to your personal brand and to what you're trying to do. And just your tech literacy. They're like this digital literacy goes both ways. Like the whole point of it is to have the understanding to be able to use the tools in the most productive way, not to ban the tools. You know what I mean? It's to understand how to use the tools in the most productive way. So it's just, I'm just so sick of this conversation at this point. Like it just makes no sense at all. And we just got people just off and running with this nonsense.
And I read some of the comments and a lot of people agree. It's like, all the kids are going to, let's just say this works. All the kids are going to do is wait till they get turn 16 and then go wild on social media. It's like you're still not getting to the root of the problem.
You're not touching the root. You're not even close.
They're not going to wait until they get 16. It's like right now, kids are already putting older ages so they can do what they want to do. That's not going to change. It's just going to get worse.
I'm just saying, let's just say in a best case scenario for DeSantis and Florida, whomever, this spooks enough people to say, all right, well, I'm going to wait till I turn 16. And on the first day of my 16th year, I'm going to fire up Facebook and TikTok and Instagram and do all and say all the things that I've been holding in ahead of time. It's like this really just pushes, if it, in a best case scenario, it just kicks the can down the road.
Mm. And they, in the article, they tried to make the analogy, which I was like, okay, now y'all really tripping of people, you know, the legal drinking age in America. And they were like, the drinking age is what it is because adults understand, you know, when they've had too much to drink, they can stop doing that and not drink so much. And kids don't understand that they've had too much social media and they don't know when to put the phone. I was like, are you out of your freaking mind right now? Like, Alcoholics Anonymous would not exist
if
people knew how to stop drinking. I'm like, come on, man. Like,
So this last thing, y'all, that we're going to talk about, we're going to just hit this one real quick because I tried to get one on a couple occasions. But back at CES, I don't know if it was the hit of the show, but definitely one of the hits of the show was the rabbit. And the rabbit is like this little AI device that it's only $200. And it just does all these little cool things. It was, it had the fortune to come out after the Humane AI pen. It does a lot of that we talked about the Humane AI pen on this show. It does a lot of what that device does, but it's inexpensive. It's $199. So what has happened is that while at CES, this thing sold out 3 times and people are still trying to order it. And the orders now, people aren't going to be getting these things until like July, August, because they weren't expecting the kind of demand that they were going to get. So, you know, Steph, I think you stuck this story in here, but you know, your question is, you know, is it a solution looking for a problem? But then you say 100,000 people trying to order this thing, maybe not. So tell us your take on this.
I mean, you know, like, do we really need another piece of hardware? I just don't think so. I think, you know, whatever smartphone companies are doing with AI right now will solve all the problems of this, you know, the functionality will match the functionality of this device. CES gets people all hyped and, you know, the most talked about thing at CES, that's always a good, you know, little title to have or whatever. But I just think this is a solution looking for a problem because I don't see what it does even now that I can't do with my smartphone beyond wear it on my chest and have it closer and more. So, I mean, I know there's like the sort of the camera thing that kind of looks at stuff as you're looking at stuff and, you know, I can get the Meta Ray-Bans for that, you know, and not have this thing on my chest, but I just don't see it. I'm like, it's just one more thing.
Yeah. So the idea of this rabbit thing, and I read into it a little bit, and basically what you do is you kind of walk it through. I don't want to say programming because that I don't want to give people the impression that you have to program this thing, but it's almost like you walk it through steps that you would normally do. Let's use Uber, for example. On my phone, if I want to hail an Uber, I got to take out my phone, I have to unlock my phone, I have to search for or however you find the Uber app. You got to open the Uber app. You got to tell it where you are. You got to tell it where you're going. You have to select what kind of ride you want, whether it be Uber X to Uber Luxury, whatever the range is. And then once you do all those steps, you got to make sure you got the payment step right, whatever the case may be. Once you do all that, then you finally hit the Uber, somebody accepts your ride and they comes picks you up. The idea with this rabbit thing is you walk it through that complete step like one time. And then every time after that, all you got to do is either talk to it. I think you talk to it and you say,
yeah,
you say, give me a ride. And this thing has a cellular connectivity. So it knows where you are. And then it does everything else. You don't have to open the app. You don't have to go through all those steps. So you do that with a lot of different websites, but it hangs on you knowing yourself enough to be able to take the time to walk it through all of these steps, from getting an Uber to buying some groceries to getting movie tickets to getting airplane tickets or reserving a hotel. You have to like be forward thinking enough as a person, as a consumer, to have the time to walk it through this process. And I don't know what the process is because I didn't look that far into it. But the idea is, once you get this thing set up, all you got to do is say, get me movie tickets or get me an Uber or get me a ticket to Mexico. And based on how you set it up, it does all that steps for you. So again, it's just kind of shortening steps. But like you mentioned, AI is coming. And once Apple figures that out, once Google and Samsung figure that out, they're going to do that for you. And they already got your name. They already got your age. They already got your payment information.
Payment information, everything.
They already got your location. They already know you, versus you got to teach this thing you. Versus I've had an iPhone, I've had an Apple account for what, better part of 20 years already almost. And it knows me already. So I don't have to, like you said, get this new thing to learn me when these things I already got already know me.
So you were going to get one, Rob.
So
right?
I want to tell you. So I didn't get on a wait list, and I'm not going to get on a wait list and have to wait months and months and months and months to try to get something.
You want it now.
But here is where I see these things going. Everyone right now is in a race for the next form factor. What comes after the cell phone for that device that's always connected that can do these additional things? And I hearken back to when the Echoes came out, when the Google things came out. I'm not going to say because I don't want mine to activate, but when they came out and they, you know, the ones that don't have screens on them, they're just like little hockey pucks with speakers. And well, who's going to use this? You know, you can't even see the information. But today, years later, I can't really imagine waking up and not asking that thing, what's the weather going to be like today? Or just in getting that kind of information. I see something similar with these type of devices. And I'll go back. I'm a Trekkie. I love Star Trek TNG. I think folks are looking for a device that they can, whether it be a ring, whether it be a watch, whether it be an actual brooch they wear on their Star Trek looking uniform, and they hit that thing and they start asking a supercomputer questions and it answers them for them and it does things for them. I think that that's kind of what people are looking for. And Terrence, to your point, your phone may be the thing when Apple figures it out. Your iPhone or your Apple Watch may be the thing once Apple figures it out, or once Google figures it out, you know, with the Pixel Watch and their phone. But I think what's happening right now is that you have Humane doing it with the AI pen. You have Rabbit doing it with their device. We're just trying to figure out what this thing is going to be and be there first. And my gut tells me they probably want to get snapped up by a big company, where they get acquired or outright acquired, to where you just bring their technology in and you start, you know, doing this to where it's now mass produced. Because 100,000 orders, that's not, you know, you add a zero to that, that just gets you to 1 million. You add another zero, that gets you to 10 million. People are going to start caring when you've got tens of millions of people, if not hundreds of millions of people, that are wanting to buy these things. And for me, it was, I am enough of a tech head to where I just like, oh, this is cool. $200 is dinner, a nice dinner. That's not a decision where I've got to make a decision on spending that for some cool tech. $800 is.
What type of connectivity though? Because to Terrence's point, you said a cellular, but who's paying for that? Because the Humane was that it was $800 plus $24 a month.
Plus $24 a month. This connects to your cell phone. This needs internet connected. You know, you give it internet connectivity however you want to get it. So that says, oh, $200, and I don't have to pay an additional monthly fee to connect this thing, and it's just like I can just use it. I'll go first. Yeah. Let me like, and that's just me because I am a like I said,
under just want a communicator.
Under a certain, even though this one is not as cool as it's bigger than the iPad, I couldn't really wear it on my on the outside of my shirt. I could definitely stick it in a jacket pocket, which is this is how my mind works.
Well, you wouldn't be able to stick it in the pocket because you need the camera. The whole point. Part of it is the camera.
Here's why I said I'm not going to pre-order it, because although these the first pre-orders will be available, I want to say a month from now, April 24th. Mm-hmm. By the time I tried to get one, it was pushing back to July or August. And it's so like at that point, I'm wearing t-shirts and shorts. I want this thing now when I'm still wearing jackets and I can put it in my breast pocket. And even though I may not be able to have it on the outside, I can still like tap my chest and start working. I literally, that is the thought that ran through my head. But really what it is for me, it's $200. And like I said, I don't want to make it seem like $200 is like an insignificant amount of money. But
that's a big difference from $800. And it is very attainable and doable for a lot of people. But again, I'm like, oh my God, I got to buy something else now. Like, I don't know. I can't see it. I don't see it happening.
But no,
Rabbit, if you want to send me something, feel free. I'm willing to test and review all gadgets and devices, but I ain't about to pay.
Shoot, holler at your boy too when you're doing it, because like I said, I actually want one. But
I think the appeal of something like this is, which makes sense, right? Which is why I'm a fan of Apple, integrating AI into Siri. Because I like the idea of being able to use my watch or talk to my phone and say, do this, that, and a third, right? But the challenge I'm having with smartphones is all the apps. It's like now you need an app for everything. And I think the appeal for me personally to this Rabbit thing is there's no apps. Once you walk it through the steps, once it learns you, there's no sign-ins. There's no, well, I mean, you have to have an account, right? With Fandango, for instance, to buy tickets through Fandango. But that's all you need, right? Now it's like going on my phone. Yes, it's like
an aggregator.
Yeah. All
your services.
Yeah, this is the third world, this first world problems, right? Oh, I got to open an app.
I can't believe I have to open a separate app.
Right.
If I have to pull my phone up to my eyesight because it's already in my hand, but if I actually have to bend my elbow to put it so I can see it, that's just too much.
Type something, that's just too much. That's just too much. What are we gonna do?
That's just too
much. But it could be appealing to those people who are willing, like I mentioned before, who are willing to go through the process of having this thing learn you. Once you've taken all the steps, once you've set up everything, once it kind of knows your patterns or know what it needs to do to complete the task, it will be interesting to see how this compares to like a Siri, to like a Hey Google, to like a Amazon on how fast or how complete those things are. Because even with Siri, you know, it's like if I'm on my watch, oh, you need to open your iPhone first. And I go on my HomePod and try to talk. Oh, you need to make sure who's speaking right now. So it's like those little things are annoying, you know, for a big company as Apple, right? You would think they would have had this down packed by now. But the fact that this new technology is coming out could put some competition. And again, I guess with this thing, if it works and it is as fast, if not faster, as completing a task with a Siri or a Google or Amazon, you know, that may put some light some fire under these main competitors to, like Rob mentioned, acquire them and integrate it or beat them.
Absolutely.
I was surprised they called it Rabbit, personally. I mean, off topic. I was like, did y'all think about that? Did y'all really want to go that route? I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah, like it was definitely popular at CES because it was like, it was one of the things I heard from the time they announced it to the end of CES, it was being talked about. Oh, wow, they had to do another pre-order. Oh, they, you know, another lot of pre-orders. And they just kept extending, I think, all the way through the end of the show. So y'all, we had a good conversation. We are definitely going to continue our conversation in the after party. For those who are wondering what the after party is, as I said earlier at the top of the show, the Tech John, in addition to being a podcast, is also a live stream. So we have patrons who are hanging out with us right now and will hang out with us in our after party, where we're going to talk some additional tech and we will get into some other stories there. So if you are interested in supporting the show that way, you can become a patron by heading over to patreon.com/thetechjohn. That is the Tech JAWN. So that being said, Tech Life Steph, tell folks how they can get at you.
You can follow me all around the web at Tech Life Steph, or check out my website, stephaniehumphrey.com.
And you can find me all over the internet at Brother Tech. That's BROTHATECH.
And I am at Rob Dunwood on all the things. And we are also at The Tech John on all the things. So come holler at us however you holler. Until we meet again in a week's time. Peace.
Peace. Peace.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.